We are so fortunate to have with us Brother Ron Brown Sr., of course, who is one of our missionaries. He works with the Save Asian Souls organization in Indonesia, and we have been sponsoring him now for several years in the work that he is doing over there. A few weeks ago, his son was here and was telling us about his work in the Philippines, and I know that they work together some in the Philippine part of Brother Sr.'s work here. And so he's going to tell us all about that tonight, and he has a slide presentation to share with us. So I'm going to turn it over to him.
I'm very pleased to be with you. It's been too many years since we've been back here in Albany. I appreciate your congregation, appreciate your stand for the truth, and I hope you'll remain solid and sound and begin to grow. Pat and I have been in the foreign mission field since 1984. That would make me in the 60s? No, I'm 86 years old. And we just got back 4 weeks ago from working in Laos and in Thailand for 6 months. And we started a new safe house. So we now have 22 safe houses for young girls to go to and be safe in that place. Human trafficking is among the fastest growing forms of international crime because current world conditions have created increased demand and supply. Migration flows are enormous, and this illicit trade is hidden within the massive movements of people across the U.S. border into Texas. It's creating a free ride for the recruiters to bring girls in, and they're bringing them in by the hundreds. It's unbelievable, and yet it's very disturbing to me. Traffickers choose to trade in humans because there are low startup costs, minimal risk, high profits, and a large demand. And that's what that large demand is, the part that makes me just sick at my stomach. For organized crime groups, human beings have one added advantage over drugs. They can be sold repeatedly. Supply and demand have created a flourishing business for traffickers. In Thailand, organized crime includes the police and much of the government. Last year when I was in Thailand, I was with the man that was driving me around Thailand, and we came upon an accident. The police were there. I said, "What about your police?" He said, "That's the mafia in uniform." And that's true. The mafia controls most of Thailand, and the government is paid off to work with the mafia. They're one of the largest purchasers of sex slaves in the world. And they're right here in Albany, Georgia. This is the reason that they go for the sex trafficking over many other things. In fact, the Russian mafia was the largest drug dealer in the United States. And now they have put the drugs aside because they got caught too many times by the authorities, and they switched to human trafficking as one of their main sources of income in the United States and many other countries. And you can see why. 21,800 for one person, one victim of human trafficking. It's unbelievable. Our goal is still the same. We are taking in young girls, and we provide a safe house for them. We have 22 safe houses. We give them Bible teaching. We give them Bibles. We do vocational education so that they have a trade that they can work and support themselves, because these girls come from very, very poor families. Recruiters that recruit the girls will go to the poorest family that he can find, and he'll lie and lie and lie about, take this girl, we'll get her a job, she'll go to America, she'll marry a rich American, and she'll have it made the rest of her life. They don't even know about human trafficking. So we have an awareness program where we try to let these people learn that human trafficking exists. I can just imagine that the parents would say, well, go with this man. He's going to give you a job. That's the biggest lie that's ever told. There's no jobs. There's no way. They have the most miserable life you can ever imagine. When we have had them, we follow up after we baptize them, and they are faithful to God. They are involved in a local congregation, and these girls are safe. And they are constantly telling other young girls, don't get involved with any man that's going to do anything for you, because it's a big lie. A recruiter in Asia will make about $300,000 per year just finding the girls and selling them to a pimp or to the Russian mafia. We'll start off with Nepal, because Nepal is our largest area of concentration of girls. We have 230 girls in our care, and that number is changing every day. Just keeps on increasing. Of those girls, probably about 58 are in tailoring school. That's the way they can make a living, is by making clothing. You see, it's so different in Thailand. Thailand's a more prosperous country, and people go into the store, they buy their clothing. But these people in Nepal are way out in the rural area. They can't even afford a bus to go to a city to buy clothing. Therefore, the girls that we train to be tailors, to make clothing, are very successful in their work. Of those that are in the program right now, 113 we have baptized into Christ, and they're active in a local congregation. This will give you an idea of one of the safe houses. And this is a greeting you find it all over Asia. Folded hands and bowing before. You don't reach out and shake hands. You're going to just be holding your hand. And what that actually means is the spirit in me greets the spirit that is in you. So that's the normal greeting in Nepal. That's the reason the girls are holding their hand. Now, the girl in the purple dress, the older looking girl, came to us about 5 or 6 years ago. And she was in our program where we had the training for the sewing and tailoring by a company. We don't do that anymore. She was so good at it that we made her in charge of the vocational school that teaches tailoring and how to make clothing. And she's doing an excellent job. She's a Christian. She was baptized several years ago. This just shows a picture of the girls at the sewing machine. This picture was taken during COVID. They had their masks down around their chin. But that's the place that's more comfortable than across your face. This is a Bible study. We have Bible classes for these girls. This is at a particular safe house. We don't even try to visit all the safe houses in Nepal. It would take weeks and weeks to visit. You'd go for one day, 8 hours just to get to a safe house. The next day would be 8 hours to another safe house. They're all out in the remote areas. And a lot of the area is part of the Himalayan mountains, with the highest peak in Nepal, Mount Everest. Here he's conducting a Bible class, and it's quite a job for us to keep 3,000 girls with Bibles. And new girls coming in all the time, we have to buy more Bibles. It's another Bible class. One of my sponsors in Texas was really disturbed to see that they were sitting on the concrete and not sitting in chairs. They're very comfortable just sitting down anywhere and without any furniture. In fact, I can go into a house in Laos or Thailand as we go up and down the Mekong River. And they say, you old man, you sit on this stool. And that little stool is the only piece of furniture they have in the house. And it's only about 6 or 8 inches high. That doesn't help me at all. I still can't get up. But they feel good about giving me the prime seat of a little stool to sit on. But she was very disturbed when she saw that the girls were sitting on the ground, and she sent some extra money to buy some chairs. The baptisms are occurring. We had a baptism last week. We're just continuously having baptism. And that water is cold, cold, cold. You know where it comes from? Snow melting in the mountains. So they don't even bother. It doesn't even bother them. They're used to it. They take a bath at the river in cold water. So be baptized in cold water, not a problem. That's an email that I received this past week. It says, "Dear Brother Ron and Jackie, greet you in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Brother, today one of our SAS girls, number 441, was baptized into Christ and became a Christian. She's been taught for some period of time the plan of salvation and what she needed to do to become a Christian. Now we talk about the Philippines. My son and I worked together, and I had him to oversee the construction of a safe house that's just for the girls that are between 8 and 20 years of age. So he built it, and now he's supervising it. We have 12 girls in that safe house, and it's capable of holding up to 20, I think, so we're going to have to recruit some more girls in. It's not as easy to work in the Philippines as it is in other countries. The government is very restrictive, very demanding of the facilities and the workers that are in the facility. So we've only baptized 4 girls in that location." That's a picture of the house parents with the girls. And some of the young kids want to come over from the orphanage, which is a separate building that my son reported to you a few weeks ago, and be in the picture. So there they are in the picture. Now we're in Laos. Laos is a communist country. It makes it a little more difficult to work in Laos. We have 40 girls in our care and 4 safe houses in Laos. And 12 of those girls have been baptized into Christ and are active in the church. That's our first. We call it VTE number 1. The VTE stands for Vientiane. That is the capital city of Laos. And this is the only facility that we have constructed, because there's always danger. Communist government come in and just say, "Okay, we're taking over your house. We're taking over your land." That's no problem for them. So we have to be very careful about even constructing anything. We have this safe house. We have another safe house that is on a farm. We have a big farm in Laos that produces a lot of food for the girls. These are the girls that are in that safe house on the first day of school, and it's very crowded. So I only had one bathroom. If you have 2 girls, you have to have at least 2 bathrooms. But we did not have the money at that time. Since then, we've built 2 showers and 2 bathrooms on the back of that house so that all the girls will have a better opportunity to use the facilities. This is our Vientiane number 2 safe house. It's located in downtown Vientiane. The house mother is the woman standing in the right. Her name is Pet, P-H-E-T, and she and her father is the director of the farm and of one safe house. And we enjoyed visiting with them. We were able to visit all the safe houses in Laos and all the safe houses in Thailand on this recent visit, in between working and doing construction. I decided last year, after I had completed the 3 years ago, that at 86, being out on the construction job site every day was just a little too hard for an old body. So I've been trying to find safe houses that I can buy, like this one. Is actually owned by her father, and we pay him for using it as a safe house. This is the farm, which feeds all the girls in Laos. Chickens, ducks, frogs, you name it, snails, pigs, just all the food that is produced will go to the safe houses for the girls. There's a picture of the gardener. Each one of those little square holes you see with a banana plant in it has grown, and it is doesn't even look like this now. It's just green, solid. This morning I spoke at a congregation down at Park Lake Church of Christ, and they were astonished when I said, when a banana plant produces a stalk of bananas, you take the stalk of bananas and then you cut down the plant. And you have to. It will not produce another stalk of bananas. So the banana plants, we have to have a lot of banana plants. Then as soon as that banana plant is free of the bananas, it's ready to start growing new life, and they grow very rapidly. And the pigs love to eat the stalks of the banana plant. Now we're in Thailand. In Thailand, we have three safe houses. We had two until we went there and worked for 6 months. One safe house, Muk Dahan, will house up to 60 girls. Chiang Mai is another safe house, which I purchased. I went over there, I said, talked to the real estate people. This is 2 years ago. Pat was not able to go with me. She's been sick ever since we got back into the U.S. It is a hard trip. It's not easy at all. But Muk Dahan was the last safe house that I constructed from ground up. Chiang Mai, I was able to find a house with 5 bedrooms and everything else that we needed, structurally sound. Found a lot right beside it for a garden so that they can grow all their vegetables and fruits. And Udong is the last one on the list, is where we were for 6 months, going over to different places in Thailand and going up to Laos to be with the girl. I have 15 in our care in Thailand, and 11 of those have been baptized into Christ. The Laotian girls and the Thai girls are much more receptive to the gospel than other locations. And I don't really know the reason. I do know that in Laos, Christians are persecuted pretty severely. When Laos was changing the face of its nation from democracy to communism, the Christians fought against communism. Well, because of that, the government, which is communist now, hates the Christians. So they persecute the Christians as much as they possibly can. But we go up the Mekong River in a boat, and we visit as many villages along the river. There would be just small villages, and many of those villages are Christians, and that we have a Christian minister at each one of the villages. That's the large safe house that I built 2 years ago. And the little girl that's standing out front is amazing. She was found with her two sisters in just a tarpaulin, that's all they had, leaning up against some structure. How they lived there is beyond me. We told the two girls who were in their teens that we would take them into the safe house, but we couldn't take in their little sister because she's too young. We used to have a limit of 10 to 20. In the last 2 years, the limit has dropped down to 8. We now take in girls 8 years old to 20 years old. We have many girls in the universities, and if they're successful in their studies, we carry them as long as they want to be educated, then they have many, many job opportunities. Well, we wanted the two girls and her to be safe because the father was a drug addict, and he could, if he had been anything normal other than the drugs affecting him, He could have sold all three girls for as much as $20,000 or $30,000. I'm glad that he didn't have enough sense to do it. So we told the teenage girls, yes, we can take you into our safe house. And they said, we will not go unless we let our little sister come with us. So we brought her. She was about 7 years old. I think she's about 8 years old now. There are the girls. You see her in her uniform going to school. They have every school in Asia has uniforms so that all are on the same level as far as appearance. This was a year ago that I was in Thailand by myself. I told the real estate agents I wanted 5 bedrooms. I wanted a kitchen and a study room for the girls. This one was a perfect fit. All the bedrooms are upstairs. We have the girls in their place. You might say it's a little inconvenient, but you have to go outside the house and come back in another area for the kitchen. And many Thai have all their cooking is cooking outside of the house because it's so hot. That's the girls that are in the Chiang Mai safe house, and the preacher, we have every employee that we have are members of the Lord's church. So very different from when we worked in China. We had to hire local Chinese to do the job. Hiring Christians, we have no problems at all. These are the girls that he's taking care of at that safe house. That's this little lot beside, which we're now using for making for a garden and vegetables and fruit. There's the garden after we have worked on it, planted the plants. And some people won't know, well, why do you cover the plants with the green stuff? If you don't cover them at 105, 106, the temperature, it'll burn the little plants up. After the little plants get stronger and bigger, you can remove that and they'll survive. They will not survive very small when they just started their root system. So we always have to cover the plants to get them to be safe. Okay, this is where we spent 6 months. At first we did not live in this facility because it was a horrible mess. We had to do a lot of work, but we finally were able to move out probably after about 2 months and live there until we finished the structure and it was ready for operation. It has 5 bedrooms upstairs, a large room downstairs, which you can see where the girls can watch TV or have the chalkboard do some of their lessons, some of their work. The sod had just been laid when I left. You can still see the joints where the sod was put together. It's solid now. It's growing everywhere. And I had an email from the safe house manager that she was going to have to cut the grass. We have 5 mango trees. The mangoes were delicious. Oh, wow. We just had mangoes all the time. Had bananas all the time. We don't have papaya growing there yet, but we will have papaya growing very soon. This is the dining room and kitchen at that safe house. During the COVID situation, we had a very, very challenging job. There were 2,800 Christians in Nepal that had no income. They work one day to buy food for the next day. They do not have any extra money. They have no extra food. So we got together with all the Christians in Nepal, said, we will provide food for you. And we did. We provided food for them for a year. Now, when they say food, that means rice. When you're in Thailand or anywhere in Asia, you eat 3 meals of rice every day. They can't go to bed at night unless they've had their rice. It is very filling, but it is not very nutritious. It's not that good. So during the COVID lockdown, we fed 2,800 Christians and provided blankets for over 1 year to help over 300 people as a result of a fire destroying 150 homes. When the fire started, it wiped out the whole village. All the houses were burned to the ground. They had no food, they had no provisions, they had no money, so we had to go in and help them as much as we could. During COVID, we also had to work in Laos, providing food, medical care, constructing gardens, raising rice, honeybees, selling items made by the girls, and fish pond and mushroom farm. We want to be self-sustaining as much as possible, and the girls need to learn how to grow vegetables, how to plant things to survive at some time in the future. With Laos being a communist country, there's a lot of ifs in life, and being persecuted by the government makes it even more difficult. That's where we delivered the rice. There are not many roads to the mountain area. It's very hard to get the rice to the poor people and to the Christians. But I'll tell you something that happened, which I think you just would have expected. Don't tell me how much you know until you show me how much you care. That is a key to winning souls many times. So we only delivered the rice from the local congregation on the back of the young men carrying it from, couldn't even get a truck up there. And used a tractor with a trailer to carry all that rice up, and we distributed it from each congregation. Well, when the Christians got their rice, they loved their neighbors, and they would share their rice with the neighbors. When they shared the rice with the neighbors became interested in learning the truth of the gospel of Christ. Had more baptisms during that period of time than any time in the past history of Nepal. So we have 35 congregations I know of in Nepal, and over 3,000 members of the Lord's Church. And it's growing every day. Massive growth compared to the United States. Regretfully, we come back to the United States, and the churches are declining. And there's at least one congregation per month less in the United States. And that is very disheartening, very discouraging. When you can't get the truck and the trailer and the tractor up in the mountains, this is not far from Mount Everest, you use a mule train. The mule train will carry the rice up to the congregations, and the congregation will distribute the rice to the family. Coming to a summary, we now take in girls that are 8 years old. Why? Because Saudi Arabia, Dubai, Qatar, many of those rich oil countries and rich men have large harems of girls. And the girls that they want to buy the most are 8 years old to go into their harem. They move some of the older girls out or resell them. We find that there's a lot of resale of girls. Slave auction is the most horrible thing that you can ever witness in your entire life. It is unbelievably the cruel, most inhuman thing that I can imagine. So around the world, there's 50 million sex slaves. That's just a staggering number to me. And it has increased more in the past 2 years than any time in the past. That's Jackie Fung. Jackie worked for me in China 18 years. He's been with me in the United States also working. I brought him from China with the hope that when I pass on, he and another man that I'm going to have to take my place and to take over the work. Jackie's a hard-working man. He first, when I was not working in China, he decided to go to Four Seas Bible School in Singapore. So he went to the Bible school in Singapore first, and then he came to the United States to the Memphis School of Preaching, and he graduated from the Memphis School of Preaching. And he's working every day trying to carry on the work, and he will do an excellent job, I am sure. We give God the honor, the praise, and the glory for the opportunity to be his servant, saving lives and souls in Asia. Most of the girls that are sold into sex slavery from Asia will end up in the United States. The highest demand for sex slaves is in the United States. Now, many other countries are the same way. Think about the Netherlands and England. In England, they actually had a man selling girls at the Heathrow Airport. And that's something I just can't imagine that the law official would allow selling of sex slaves at the airport. But they're all over Europe. And, of course, the largest purchaser of sex slaves is the Russian Mafia, which is headquartered out of St. Petersburg, Russia. And they control a large, large area of countries where they go. And they're inhuman. That's all I can say. They don't care. The girls are mistreated, abused, badly abused. I just have the greatest sympathy that's possible for a girl that gets caught in a slave market. Thank you for being a part of our work. I appreciate it very much. It takes a lot of money to do the work that we're doing. But we have found that we have congregations that are willing to help us, have been helping us for many years to build this up and to save many girls from a horrible, horrible life. This morning I spoke after I did the presentation down at Lake Park. And my title of my sermon was Lost Souls. I used as my text Romans chapter 9. In Romans chapter 9, the first 10 verses, or what we look at right now for just a few minutes. I know that I need to be more diligent in trying to save souls, but I can never reach the degree of the Apostle Paul. Therefore, I know I need the lesson, and the lesson starts right back here. You may be in the same position that you need to be more diligent in soul searching. Searching for people that you can lead to Christ. Because they may not be led to Christ unless you do it. Each of us has at least what the scriptures call a household, which is 8 to 15 people that we have very close contact with. We know them very intimately. They are sometimes our relatives. And we have a basic goal to reach our immediate close family. And we have a responsibility. Paul talks about it in Romans chapter 9 as being a burden to him, a driving force, a force to keep him going, keep him in line, trying to reach the law. He goes to the extent that he said he would give up his life as a Christian, as a savior, as a soul salvation. He would give it up if he could convert the Jews in place. Of course, that's not possible. I think it's hypothetical that what Paul was saying. He said he would be damned to eternity without hope if he gave up his soul. If that would save the Jewish nation, God's chosen people, and that yet the God's chosen people have always been far, far away from God's plan for them in the world. So, are you willing to give up some of your time and some of your effort, some of your life for the people that are close to you? I gave an example, and I have two examples. Number one, you're coming home from work, it's late in the day, It's almost mealtime. As you come into the subdivision where you live, you are on a street that your house is on. And as you approach the area, the third house down from you, you notice a bright orange and red flame inside the house. The house is on fire. And of course, you stop. The fire department's not there. So you immediately get your cell phone and you call for the fire department to come to the burning house, which is very close to your home. You get out of your car and you try to see if anyone, you know the family, they have three children, and you're trying to see, what can I do to save the family? The second scenario is this. You're coming home from work, you're tired, you're looking forward to being at your home with your family. You pass the house that's three doors down from you. You know the people, you know the children, you know what the people do, that they're not Christian, they don't go to church on Sunday, they're not religious people, but you drive on by. Tragically, and that is a tragedy, we do not have the same interest and the same love for lost souls that Paul had when he said he'd give up his salvation in order to save the Jewish nation. You pass on by the house and you never return again, and you may never have an opportunity again to tell the people about the love of Christ and the hope of eternal life when this life is over. Don't tell me how much you know until you show how much you care. And that's one of the keys. That's the reason that we've converted so many people in Nepal. Because the Christians of Nepal showed their love and their concern for their neighbors. And the neighbors listened to the teaching of the Bible and became Christians. I don't know how many hundred were baptized, but there were a lot of baptisms, more baptisms than we'd ever had in Nepal. So the ball is in your court and my court. I'm delinquent and not having as much zeal and inspiration. It's not the driving force that I want it to have. I pray for the lost. I try to preach the gospel in its purity to people. I try to convince people that other souls are important, that you can save their soul. And we could fill this building without any problem if everyone would just convert one person per year. That's all it would take to fill the building. So keep that in mind. You have a driving responsibility of God to fulfill our mission on this earth, to seek and to save the lost. Paul comes to the end of first or second Corinthians, I can't remember it right off, where he says, I am compelled to go and preach the gospel. Woe unto me if I do not. And I'll tell you tonight, woe unto you if you do not go and preach the gospel to your neighbors and to your intimate friends and your close relatives. You have the responsibility of 8 to 15 people who will either be saved or be lost. We want them saved. We want them to be there. You wonder, well, now how can you have joy like Paul talks about in Romans and in Corinthians? How can you have the joy when you know that people are dying and going to be lost eternally? It is possible to have the joy of the Christian life and to know that you're saving other lives, and that you'd be compelled and just driven to go and teach others about the gospel. We are very blessed people, more blessed than we ever deserve. But we have a responsibility in turn. Woe unto you and to me if we do not do what God has told us to do. Maybe you need to have the prayers of the congregation. If you would come tonight and say, I would like to have prayers. I want to be more zealous in winning lost souls. I've been delinquent in my service, and we have, and I have. I want to make things right with God, and the elders will pray for you and for me. Or if you've never become a Christian, you know what to do. You know that you're one of the blessed people of the world, that you have access to the gospel of Jesus Christ, and you have the brotherhood that loves you and loves everything about you. You may need to come and be baptized tonight if you're not a Christian. If you're subject to either one of those, would you come as together we stand and sing the invitation song?